Today we talk about estate planning and wills. My name is Amanda Visser. We have all heard horror stories of friends and family members who have died without a last will and testament. We have also heard scary stories of people who have drafted their own wills, but in the process caused a lot of harm and hardship to those who've been left behind. A will is basically a detailed summary of a person's financial affairs and what must happen to all the assets once the person is no longer there. We talked to Dr. Eben Nell, National Chairman of the Fiduciary Institute of Southern Africa, about how proper estate planning ties in with the drafting of a valid and meaningful will. Eben, maybe we could start off by explaining what is estate planning.
Amanda, every one of us has assets, and collectively we can call our estates. Usually there will be a financial plan and a succession plan, which just mean that if one die, you have some wishes of what must happen with your estate after your death. And that process of linking your financial position, your financial plan to your succession plan, that we can call estate planning. Mm-hmm. So it will include the arrangement and the disposition of your estate in such a way that your wishes are clear and practicable, and that it is possible for the executor to fulfill your wishes after your death.
And what are the consequences if you do not do this?
You will definitely still die, and you will definitely still have an estate, and the executor will still have to deal with your estate in some way. Part of the estate plan is obviously your formalized will. So even if you die without a will or without any plan, the process will still be followed by the executor, but he won't have any indication of what you wanted, and there wouldn't have been any plan. And we all know, you know, the old adage that if you don't plan, then you will definitely fail. So intestate succession will then be applicable if there's no will. And if you did not have a plan before you made the will, it is possible that there may be a cash shortfall in your estate. If you had a will without a plan, it will mean that some of your wishes may not be practical. The executor won't be able to actually execute some of your wishes. To take an example, if you said that somebody must receive a certain amount of money, what we call a legacy, and there's not enough cash in the estate to do that, then maybe the executor will have to sell a property, mm-hmm. a fixed property, to pay out that cash amount, sure. Which means the person that would have received the fixed property won't receive the fixed property any longer. Because a legacy, for instance, is a stronger or stand first in the line before an heir. So there's different rules that the executor will have to apply. And if no exercise was done beforehand to plan it properly, then it may just mean that your wishes may fail.
Can you give us a few practical examples of how you go about planning your estate? In other words, what are those points that you just mentioned as well that you have to keep in mind while doing that?
I'd say that the most important thing is that one should get somebody to assist you in the process. Doesn't mean that nobody can do it on their own, just like you can maybe service your car on your own, but you may not be able to do it as effectively as a professional. So my advice would always be that you go to someone that can assist you, and your estate plan should flow from your financial plan. So when you plan your retirement, or even after retirement, you plan your financial planning with your financial planner, to make sure that you have enough money to last your lifetime, to do sensible investments, etc. From that should flow also the estate plan to say, well, this is all good and well, but what happens when I die? Or what happens when the first one of a couple die? You know, what will be the outcome for the survivor? And it is very important, because sometimes people, it may be a second or third marriage. Mm-hmm. There may be different sets of children involved. Some people may have maintenance claims against the deceased, etc. So all those factors must be taken into consideration. You know, there may have been a previous marriage, and there may be some consequences from that marriage as a maintenance liability, etc. And all those aspects should be considered by the estate planner to advise the client on what the effect of that would be and the legal effect and how that it should be integrated in the estate plan.
Ibn, would you say that your financial planner and your estate planner should be the same person?
Ideally, it should be two different people. There are some financial planners that also do estate planning, but in many firms, you will have two different individuals. I always like to say that the focus of the financial planner is different. The focus of the financial planner is really to make sure that you have enough money if you live too long, while the focus on a lighter way, the focus of the estate planner is to make sure that there's enough money if you die too early. And we don't know which one will happen. So they both have a role to play. It is possible that the same person can do it, but in, as I say, in most cases, you'd have two different individuals. Because the estate plan is a far more a legal exercise, while the financial plan is mainly a financial and the economic exercise. In both cases, tax planning does play a central role. Because it's tax consequences, whether you're alive or whether you die, there will always be tax consequences.
We've all heard about couples being married in community of property and out of community of property. Would you mind explaining to us the difference and the impact of that on estate planning?
The way that people are married, the matrimonial property regime is obviously very important when they die, because the marriage comes to an end. So people often think that that is an important factor when they get divorced, but it is just as important when they die because you have the same consequences. So marriage in community of property just means that there's only one estate. It's a joint estate. So if one of the two partners die, it means that that one estate is actually administered by the executor. So every asset that those two spouses have will be affected and will be administered in that process, although only half of the estate will inherit. And that means a half of everything, half of every car and every couch and every fixed property. When you marry out of community of property, it simply means that there are two different estates. Each party has his or her own estate. Just like they had it before their marriage, they will also have their different estates and their separate estates after their marriage. So if one of them die, it is only that estate of the deceased party that will be administered. So take an example, if spouses have a joint primary residence and they married in community of property and the resident is registered in both names, it means that property will be form part of the estate, but only half of that property will be transferred. Either to, so the American community of property and the will says that all my assets go to my children, and these two children, it will actually mean a quarter of that estate will go to each of the two children, and the surviving spouse will be left with 50% of the house. If they married out of community of property and the house is only registered in the deceased spouse's name, then obviously it will be transferred to his heirs. If it's registered in the name of the surviving spouse, then it won't be affected at all, won't form part of the estate. Yeah. But at the same token, sorry, just to make it complete to understand that if they married out of community of property and the house is registered in both names, because that is also possible, then you will have a similar consequence to the situation where they were married in community of property.
But what is the consequence for the surviving spouse when they sit with half a house?
Well, that is obviously very complicated. And people, to take a simple example, if you die, if you have a combined estate, as an example, and the husband dies without a will, then intestate succession will take place, which will mean that his wife and his children will collectively, and there's certain rules that I won't go into the detail, but they will collectively inherit from the husband and from the father. So the wife will ultimately sit with half of the property plus a percentage of the other half, depending on how many children there are. And the effect will be that they will be co-owners. The children will automatically become co-owners of that house, and percentage-wise. So literally they will be able to say that we also want to live in the house. They will have to contribute partly to the costs and the maintenance, etc. So yes, it can become a very unfortunate situation if there's no plan and if people do not understand the consequences of their wills and their wishes.
Complicated indeed. Although the role of trusts have diminished over the years, can you explain the role of trust in estate planning and eventually the purpose in a will?
Yeah, I think the simple thing to understand of a trust is that it is separate usually, and I'm generalizing now, but it is separate from the estate of the individual. So if you have an out-of-community of property situation, there are two estates. And if those parties collectively have a trust, let's say an inter vivos trust between living people, then that would be a form of separate estate. So any assets that have been placed in the trust would fall outside the estates of the two parties. So there's different reasons why a trust may be important. In a case of a living trust, people would usually form it to protect assets. Because if you have assets in a trust and you are a business person and you land into financial difficulties, you've maybe signed surety for your company, etc., then your creditors will not be able to attach the assets that are in the trust because they're separate from your personal assets. And you do not automatically bind the trust when you stand surety, for instance, because as trustee, those assets are not part of your personal estate. So that is in general the main reason why one would use a trust. The further purpose of a trust is it can become part of your succession planning. If you have three children, for instance, and if a family purchase a holiday home, and they say, we would love this home to remain in the family for a long time, maybe for two or three generations. We'd love our great-grandchildren to play there. Then if you put it in a trust from day one, it means it will not be affected by the death of either the father or the mother because it's not the asset. And there would be a smooth succession process. When the last one of them die, the children will just remain the beneficiaries of the trust, and after their death, even the third generation will just remain the beneficiaries. So ultimately, you don't have a transfer of the property every time when somebody dies. If there's three children, it does not have to be registered in all three their names. It just remains in the trust. So it's also a very good succession planning instrument. The other type of trust is your testamentary trust, the trust that you actually form in a will. And there's various reasons why one would do that. That would be for assets to be inherited by minors, for instance, or to be protected for a period of time. Say, for instance, a farm. You can put it in a trust and you can say, my children are the beneficiaries of the trust, but my wife will be an income beneficiary. So she will not get the capital of the farm, but for the rest of her life, she will get the benefits and the fruits of the farm. So a trust usually must form an integral part of your estate plan.
Eben, thank you very much for those insightful information. That was Dr. Eben Nel, National Chairman of the Fiduciary Institute of South Africa.